and you're watching The Inside TV.
I never thought Corona could be such a nasty bitch. But now that she's here, boy, all I want is for you to use common sense. Stay in right now. No. Do it for humanity. I'm dead ass about that, but we will survive.
I'm your host, Shawnee Harris, and thank you for listening to the Be Inside TV podcast. In this episode, I speak with Rose McGowan about her new album, Planet Nine, Harvey Weinstein, The Rose Army, and the Me Too movement, which was started by Tarana Burke. I also discuss with her experience growing up a child in a cult, her book, Brave, and how she's currently managing quarantine life. We will also listen to some tracks from her album that is currently out now and learn more about the backstory so we can understand the experience that she had with Harvey Weinstein and Hollywood. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Well, thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
You're very welcome. I love the album, by the way. It's great that you were able to express yourself musically. Can you talk about the process that you had to create it?
Well, it was a long path to creating it. I had wanted to do an album in about around the same time Lindsay Lohan's album came out. And I just thought, well, this is not going to work. And I realized that, you know, when you're an actor, you certainly don't get taken seriously when you do other things. And that's likely also because a lot of times the music that actors do kind of sucks. Not all of it, but a lot of it. But it seems that singers can be actors, right? So that's kind of strange. And I just thought, well, okay, I'm not an actor anymore. Now I can do whatever I want. And what I want to do is heal people. And I wrote, it's Brave, my book that I wrote. I recorded Planet Nine simultaneously and wrote it at the same time as writing the book. And one is to really help people kind of confront some reality and get free from the system. That's Brave. And the other one, Planet Nine, is like the reward. It's like, here you go. You went through some hard stuff. And it's also kind of like my gift to people for the last 3 years, you know, dealing with all the Harvey Weinstein stuff, with all the Me Too stuff. So many people were triggered, you know, and a lot of people, you know, needed to go through that cultural reset because so many of us are walking around with trauma. But this is kind of my Planet Nine is like, I know you're all trapped inside and you can't leave, but what if we can travel inside? And so I crafted something with great collaborators, with deep consideration and a lot of complexity. And I've tested it on groups of everyone from like 10-year-olds to 85-year-olds. And it really works.
And how did you assemble the team to create this musical work? You said you were working on your book Brave, and in the book you describe how you were growing up in a cult. So you said, because I read your statement about the album, how you had a fictional planet. Can you talk more about that influence in growing up in the cult and how it inspired the album?
Yeah, I mean, I would watch my father, you know, he was the leader, and people like immediately heard the word cult, and I'm like, yes, but separate that from the word leader, he was a great leader to watch, but I also watched him wire people's minds, and I kind of figured out how to kind of reverse that a little bit. And so when I was 10, I got sent from a hippie commune in Italy called a cult to an American military school where they told me how I grew up was terrible and that they were better. And I was like, but you people are terrible. You're awful. You want me to conform to what I don't understand because I don't see the benefit of conforming if I have to be like you. And so I decided, as a kid does, to invent my own imaginary friend, except for my imaginary friend is a planet I named Nine. And then as we do, we forget about our imaginary friends, right? And later, when about 6 years ago, when astronomers discovered Planet Nine, I mean, I fell out of my chair, literally. And then, of course, I had this strange thought. I was like, I must make an album for my planet. Naturally, that's the thing, too. And so it was just that first thought. And then I was photographing these two French electronic musicians for their album cover, because I do a lot of photography. And I heard their music, and I was like, who's, you know, doing vocals? And they're like, nobody. And I'm like, so I started collaborating with them. From there, I found my favorite Daft Punk producer, DJ Falcon. And then from there, I found a guy who produced one of my favorite Massive Attack songs. And then I assembled. And for my sound mixer, I went on a dating app because a friend of mine told me that she'd gone out on a date with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's sound mixer. And I was like, well, how'd you meet him? I need a mixer for my album. I have no idea how to find one because I'd never done this before. I'd only worked in Hollywood and at a funeral home. That's my job experience. And she's like, well, I went on this dating app. And I was like, sweet. So I went on, found him, got a date. He comes over. I lower the lights. I have him lay on the floor, kind of like my instructions for listening to Planet Nine the first time. And 20 minutes in, he turns to me. He's like, I can make this 20% better. And we never dated. I immediately went off the app, and he mixed my album, along with Stuart White, who did Beyonce's mixing, who did a couple of my tracks, too. So it was like a really holistic process of, like, what is the next right action? And kind of manifesting that, but like just by like, this is what I need now. Cause I didn't know all the steps to make an album, but I had to do it all on my own because it wasn't like a producer who was overseeing the mix. A producer is overseeing all the things. Like I was the producer of the producers and I'm not. So I just cobbled it together and I thought, why not aim for masterpiece? Why not aim for like a serious piece of art? I don't do fluffy things. It's not in my nature, but I can make beauty. And my father was an incredible painter. And I approached my writing in my book and writing the album in the same way, because I'd never done either. I thought, well, I'll just paint with words and I'll make it like almost cinematic imagery, but with words. And so I hope I achieve that. Yeah. I can hear you now.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Hi. I can hear you now. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I was
probably my Wi-Fi. I'm in the jungle.
Are you out of the country?
Yeah, I'm in Mexico.
Oh, wow. So did you get stuck there during the quarantine when you traveled and then you weren't able to get back in to the country?
No, this was a very specific effort to not be in America. That was a strategic decision. I had been lucky enough. I was giving a speech in Norway about 7 weeks ago. And at that point, only Northern Italy was locked down. And then I went to London and then Southern Italy was locked down. And I was like, this is coming. And my lease was up in New York. So I raced back, grabbed my puppy and really thought about where I wanted to quarantine and ride it out. And I was like, well, I love Mexico. I go there a lot. I love the jungle and really healing energy there. And it's a third of the rent, if that. So let's go.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So it's luck, but also strategy.
I feel like people are dancing on our graves. People in fancy dresses, black, of course, posing and living it up on the red carpet, and the black, stupid clothes that the stupid men wore. It's a lie. And I knew they were going to trot the activists out there for PR.
It was one of the most important nights of the Me Too movement. Hollywood's biggest stars wearing black at the Golden Globes to rail against the system that allegedly allowed sexual misconduct to fester for decades. Yet one of the most crucial people in this saga wasn't there, Rose McGowan. For her, that night was all for show.
Every time I thought about those black dresses, I would get a body flashback. Every time.
What
even
do you mean?
Right now.
What do you mean by a body flashback?
I can feel them there.
The hymn she's speaking about is Harvey Weinstein. More than 90 women, including McGowan, have come forward to accuse the once powerful movie mogul of acts ranging from sexual misconduct to rape.
This is an international rapist, okay? This is the truth of what it is. This is an international rape factory. Every single place he ever stayed, there are people there set up to help him rape. This is how it went. This is what it was. People, women, girls would be said, oh, you have a meeting or come to a party, they would show up and that party is just him. Who got them there? Who are the assistants?
You're saying there was a machinery.
So I'm saying there's a massive machinery. He is a sociopathic predator. He thinks he's done nothing wrong. I wish Just one person would have stood up and said no more, because so many people had so many chances to put a stop to this.
Now McGowan herself is saying no more. Her new memoir, Brave, is a call to arms, going after the Hollywood establishment and telling the story of the day she says Weinstein raped her.
Can you give us a sense of what happened?
My life changed. I thought my life was getting easier.
It was January 1997, the Sundance Film Festival. By this point in her young career, the 23-year-old actress, known as an indie darling,
I think sometimes the city is sucking away at my soul,
had garnered praise for leading roles in films like The Doom Generation.
Oh, you want to play Psycho Killer?
Then she catapulted to mainstream success with Scream. It's at Sundance that she encounters Weinstein, then head of Miramax. She knows he's just a few seats away in the screening of Going All the Way during her topless scene.
Well, no. Sexual.
She says it was deeply embarrassing.
Just go away.
I slid down in the chair. I was pretty mortified.
And why did you slide down in your seat?
Because I felt the man watching me.
The studio head.
It felt really exposed. It was like an appetizer, I suppose, right?
McGowan refuses to call Weinstein by name in our interview, nor in her book.
You call him the monster, the pig monster.
Yeah.
The studio head.
I never wanted him to have residency with my words.
The morning after the screening, McGowan says her then manager, Jill Messick, set up a business meeting for her and Weinstein at the restaurant in his hotel. McGowan says he moved the meeting to his palatial suite.
What were your thoughts going in?
My thought actually was just really like, oh, he'll realize I'm not like other actresses, that I actually have a brain. And that was my goal of the meeting.
To impress him with your mind?
Or just be me, really, I guess.
And so what was your impression when you first met?
I thought he was a warthog from hell. I thought he was terrifying looking. I thought he was the single most ugly person I'd ever seen in my life.
Despite that, the meeting goes well. But as she's walking towards the door to leave, she says things take a fateful turn.
In my head, I was on my way out a door. My brain was on the next moment of what I had to do that day. And the next thing I know, I'm in a totally, completely different situation. So my poor brain is just like shocked, and my poor body is left behind.
In her book, she writes Weinstein pushes her into the suite's jacuzzi room and quickly removes her clothing. She says she's so shocked, she freezes like a statue.
1 minute you're in a meeting, and the next minute you're in a bathroom.
It's just like that.
She says Weinstein picks her up and places her on the edge of the jacuzzi. Then, she says, he begins to perform forced oral sex on her.
You write, you detach from my body. I hover up under the ceiling, watching myself sitting on the edge of the tub against a wall, held in place by the monster whose face is between my legs, trapped by a beast. Those are your... That's...
A nightmare. Literally a nightmare. And you will never be the same. But it was consensual, right? I don't know about you, but when you've had consensual sex, you don't really fill up with tears afterwards.
In statements to ABC News, an attorney for Weinstein said that Rose McGowan is looking to promote her new book. And in doing so, she tries to smear Mr. Weinstein with a bold lie, adding that he denies her allegations of non-consensual sexual contact, and it is erroneous and irresponsible to conflate claims of inappropriate behavior and consensual sexual contact later regretted with an untrue claim of rape.
Every single time there's an article about it where they have to put in that it was consensual. It is so repulsive and violating feeling.
Because a lot of people say, well, why didn't you fight him off? Why didn't you run?
A lot of people are also stupid. That would be my response. And they know it, and they know they're saying horrible things and stereotypical things that need to stop. I'm tired of that language. I'm tired of like having to answer basic, mundane questions. It's not my fault you're stupid. It's not my fault you can't think bigger. It's not my fault you can't put yourself in the shoes of someone who's been terrorized repeatedly. So don't ask me those questions, because you don't deserve an answer with that. Not you, but the greater you.
What was the emotional impact on you of what happened in that hotel room?
I would have night terrors. I would sweat through to the mattress, an inch down into the mattress. I would wake up screaming. This went on for years.
McGowan says after the alleged Weinstein incident, she met with a criminal attorney about pressing charges, but she was talked out of it.
She told me, you're an actress. You did a sex scene. You're done. You'll never win. And she was right. She was not wrong. That was my reaction. I'm going to have to do this a different way.
She reached a settlement with Weinstein for $100,000 in August of 1997. A copy of it was posted here on The New Yorker. In exchange, she would not pursue legal action against him.
Do you regret having signed the settlement?
No, it's not a factor. I didn't take money for what happened to me. I took money because it's my only way of saying, literally my only way of saying, I did not like this. I did not want this. This was not consensual. Get off me. No, stand back. That was it. This was my only recourse. And in my child's brain, I thought $100,000 is a lot of money.
She says that settlement did not include a confidentiality agreement.
Were there times during the 20 years where you thought, I'm going to break my silence? I'm going to come forward?
Nope.
Why?
People were too stupid. The language and media was not anywhere close to where it needed to be.
Because what happened to me behind the scenes happens to all of us in this society, and that cannot stand, and it will not stand.
The courage of her convictions formed by a harrowing childhood. She was born in Italy and raised in what many call a cult, the Children of God. She eventually left the group for the U.S., where she says she bounced from one broken home to the other.
You ended up running away?
Yes.
Homeless on the streets. What was that like?
Hungry, and where I was very cold, very wet. It was tough.
What motivated you to become an actress?
I had nowhere to live.
You were doing it to get
money
and food.
It was mercenary. It was completely mercenary.
She landed her first speaking role when she was 15 in the cult classic Encino Man.
Oh my God, he is totally rude.
Over the next 5 years, she would go on to appear in seven more films.
Hello, she lives in Whittier.
By 1997, her career was just taking off when she says the alleged rape happened. From then on, she says, it all fell apart.
Do you think the studio head sabotaged your career?
I know he did.
In what way?
Call every independent studio at the time. I was his number one target with a nice red line through my name.
In a statement to ABC News, representatives for Weinstein said Mr. Weinstein did not retaliate or blacklist Ms. McGowan. In fact, she continued to work with Mr. Weinstein and attended charity events and industry gatherings hosted by Mr. Weinstein. But McGowan's work in film slowed, so she focused on TV work outside Weinstein's sphere of influence for a lead role in the series Charmed.
Don't tell me I become good in the future.
Damn good.
But under the surface, her rejection of the Hollywood establishment brewing.
These are very powerful people you're talking about.
They are. So am I.
You were mentioning about the dating app that you found your sound engineers and people through a dating app. Can you say which one it was? Was it Hinge? Was it Tinder? Was it
Raya? I'm not going to say which one it was because I don't want people going out there and finding them.
Oh, so he's still on the app?
Well, I don't know. He probably is. I only went on it one time in my life because, frankly, I am too old for that shit. Although my aunt is, like, in her 60s, and she's beautiful, and she kills on Tinder. It's hilarious. But I feel like I'm past that point. But I did go on just for the sound mixer, yes.
So there are interesting names for the title for each song on the album. Like, how did you come up for the names to take the audience on the journey when they're listening to the
Well, I've been fascinated by galaxies and star clusters, and Origami, that one is quite a funny song to me in a way. Actually, it makes me feel like you've said something naughty, and I laugh when I hear it because it's a metaphor. And for that song specifically, I was thinking of stars and how they rapidly reproduce. And I was like, I wonder what music they would, you know, make love to. And so I wrote them a song, right? Which can also be used on Earth for that specific thing. But others, you know, I don't know, like the kind of Venetia, that one, it's a cluster of stars and that I really have always liked. And it has It's the hunter. It's a boots. It's a man, the outline of the stars that, you know, in they have the outline of the stars and they've outlined it to be a man with two hunting dogs. And I've always kind of related to that image, right? Like just being the hunting dog in a way, but being kind of astral at the same time.
And how did your experiences
and in a green? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, sure.
Oh, sorry, Siren, that song, Siren. Mm-hmm. It could actually be called Me Too because it's a banger beat, but the lyrics are all for, that one is very specifically for rape victims, that song, that track, those lyrics. But it's also just for people who've experienced trauma and pain and need a musical release with it. Green Gold, the actual producer named that for my eye color. So everyone has, you know, in Lonely House, I was driving in Colorado one night and I looked up while I was driving and there was this lonely house on top of this mountain. It had one light on and I related to that house and its lonely house so heavily because it really reminded me of when I was really famous, like when I was on TV, and that kind of fame is so weird because you have to literally pay people like $6,000 a month to keep humans away from you. And so you're just essentially in quarantine. It's a really weird, and I didn't like living that way. It wasn't my favorite way to live, but it did prepare me for quarantine in a weird way, except for this time we have the added bonus of death on the outside.
How did your experiences in Hollywood shape you? You were mentioning about being on TV. You were on Charmed, which was a hit series. And then also you started mm-hmm. in Doom mm-hmm. Generation that Greg Araki had directed, but you've had a lot of...
It shaped me the way that I write. Yeah, I have. Yeah. It shaped me in the way... That's a good question. In that I had a lot of time to think, you know, about who I was as an artist, because I was told I was a commodity for a really long time and sold as one. And I kind of thought of myself as a commodity that wasn't worth much, you know, in the world. And then one day I realized I was an artist and that meant I was worth everything and that we are major players in society. And I also realized I have a voice and I can use it, and I will, to better society as well. And so acting was never... I was discovered, so it was never a passion of mine. I just kind of strangely happened to be kind of good at weaving my body and letting other kind of characters take over. But what I did learn from the directors I worked with largely, I worked with some great ones, and I worked with a lot of them. I just learned how not to treat people, you know, how not to treat people that are busting their ass for you. Well, I never treated people like that in the first place, but I really learned on the job not to do it like them. So I learned from a lot of other people's mistakes, I think, more than anything, and how to craft my own work. But I applied film knowledge to Planet Nine. I wanted to make it. That's why I used my mixer, Michael Patterson. He does scores for movies. He did Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's scores. They do amazing scores, really pinpoint detailed sound. And I'd love... the sound, you know, that we can provide in the cinema. We can do a lot of different things in the mix to make people feel different ways. And it's different than a pop mix, right? So I've used a lot of my cinema training in making everything I do, really.
And with the book, Brave, like when you made the book, mm-hmm. you were talking about the Me Too movement and how you've been a champion for the Me Too movement, and you have your Rose Army. Like, how important is it for you to be able to have the platform that you have to speak to victims of trauma, and especially now?
Right. Well, I would say, you know, my book Brave came out about 2 months after the Harvey Weinstein exposés came out that I helped set up those articles. And then right then the Me Too hashtag kind of kicked off and it kind of got slapped on me. And what I always say is Tarana Burke created that language tool. Are you... Did this happen to you? Me too. It's a communication tool. The media labeled it a movement. If I could say for myself, I was kind of a one-woman movement, but my movement is a cultural reset. It was like exploding TNT, making a huge mess, and then we all clean it up and we're better for it. Like when you're little and you grow taller, your legs hurt, but go you. You got taller. Things hurt sometimes. And it was a hurtful period for a lot of people and very triggering. And so I wanted to really give them the gift of Planet Nine. Kind of as my way to thank them, you know? And again, right now we can't travel outside, but we can travel inside.
You do take the audience, the listener on a sonic journey. You're a visual artist, but just listening to the album, it does make sense what you were saying about the opportunity to travel, because it's, you have the sonic journey, but then I could actually in my mind like see some of the visual like some any types
That's
of
so
visuals
cool.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in an intergalactic movie. It's it has a very
yes,
cinematic
Johnny, that's exactly how it's
landscape
supposed to be.
To it. Yeah. Understand what you were saying about healing too for people who have been traumatized or affected and who also came forward in terms of Me Too. Something like that happened to me, and just hearing other stories allowed me to reflect on a lot of things that I had been suppressing. So thank you for being so outspoken about a lot of things that you've been doing to create voices for people who don't have that opportunity.
Well, you're welcome. And I know it's hard and it's not pretty. And what happened to you, you got stolen. And I'm really, really sorry. And it's really not fair. And if someone had stolen your purse, nobody'd be like, what was Shawnee's purse wearing? Do you know what I mean? Or you wouldn't have to unpack the levels like, oh, did I talk to that person afterwards? Did I talk to them too much before it happened? Do you know what I mean? Or like just weird things that we're stuck with, that we're left with. We're left with the mess. And then we have to figure out how to become 2.0 versions of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I wrote Brave, because I know that's what I can do and I can help. And I know because if they're oppressing me and my voice and I'm somebody with a platform, what are they doing to the cashier worker at McDonald's? Who's she, you know? So if I don't want to presume to speak on behalf of other people, but I know certain things quite intimately and deeply. And I also cultivated, you know, one of the reasons I did Charmed is because I joined when it was already a hit. And I knew when it came time to strike Weinstein, I would have a global audience. I just had to wait and wait and wait and just keep my nose to the grindstone and work and gather data and gather information. It was kind of like deep undercover work. I got lost for a while. But when I found my way out of the Hollywood cult, you know, it was really freeing that, okay, yeah, I had to sell my house to pay lawyers to fight Harvey Weinstein. I had to leave everything I knew and had. I had to give up my career. I had to do all that. Is truth and a cultural reset and getting society to be better, is that more important to me than my house and my belongings and my art? And the answer is yes. And I know for a lot of people, that's not the answer. I might just be a little strange that way. I don't know. I know I'm different because, there's somebody from the Black Lives Matter movement that told me once, they're like, the reason they don't like you is because you don't behave like a white woman is supposed to behave. And I don't know about that, but I guess not, because I don't see a lot of other people, you know, with the same, and if not a much bigger platform than me, going hard and telling the truth.
For coming on the journey to Planet Nine. It's my prescription for healing. It's what helped me through very hard times. We're going through a hard time right now. And I think we can all use some astral traveling. If we can't go outside, we can go in. Join me on the journey to Planet Nine.
Stay tuned for part two of my conversation with Rose McGowan. In the next episode, Rose McGowan talks about the sexual misconduct allegations against Joe Biden, Tara Reid, her current relationship with her former Charmed co-star Alyssa Milano, Oscar winner Quentin Tarantino, and a possible revelation from Uma Thurman. Thanks for tuning in. You can listen to the Be Inside TV podcast on Spotify, Anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and everywhere that podcasts are found.